Welcome to another episode of the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona, and I was in a neurodiverse relationship for 32 years. I was married for 30, and we didn't find out we were neurodiverse until our 29th year of marriage. And I'm here with Olga.
And I'm Olga, and I was in a neurodiverse relationship for about a year. And that was the beginning of the story.
And then our newest co-host is Manisa.
Hi, I'm Manisa, and I've been in a neurodiverse marriage for the past 6 years and been together for 8 years. And I discovered that my husband was on the spectrum while studying to become a board certified behavior analyst.
Awesome. Awesome. And we are thrilled that you have joined us. And today we're going to talk about a topic that's going to be interesting, probably for both partners, but maybe more for the neurotypical. And that's the importance of self-care and how it helps us grow. And I'll start by sharing a little bit about what I didn't do when it comes to self-care. I think one of the things, being a social worker, I've been a social worker for over 30 years, and I knew how to take care of everybody. I had, you know, grandparents who needed my care, a father who had had a heart attack and then a stroke who I took care of, my mother who I took care of. I took care of everybody and was very much a people pleaser. And the one person who I did not take good care of was myself. I made sure that I also took good care of my daughter and my ex-husband at the time and basically put everybody else first. And so what happened with me in my marriage was that I started losing myself. And what I realized was I did not know who I was at some point. And I realized that if I didn't take care of myself, I would lose myself altogether. So I'll talk a little bit more about kind of my transformation, but I wanted to let Manisa talk about what she's doing right now in her relationship, because she's dealing with this day in and day out right now.
Yeah, and you're exactly right, Mona. I went through just a deep, dark place of not knowing how to take care of myself. This is outside of being in a neurodiverse relationship. I had attempted to over the years to try to instill some self-care things, but I wasn't finding what the right things were for me. I came into my marriage thinking that if my husband did something that hurt me, then it's his responsibility to fix it and make it all better. Mm. And that was not the right type of thinking, especially in a neurodiverse relationship, because I was assuming that, number one, he knew what he did, was conscious, was aware of it, could identify it. And then number two, and he knew what to do to fix it. And he did.
Great points. Yeah. Yes. Great points. Great points.
And he did not. And so, like you, I did a lot of hitting my head up against a wall until I had this aha moment that my feelings are inside of me. They help me to identify what feels good for me and what doesn't feel good for me. So even though it may be my husband's fault that I'm in a bad place, it's my responsibility to fix it, mm-hmm. not his responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so then I had to figure out, well, what does that look like? How do you fix these negative emotions? I've always been a journaler. I've done that since I was 12 years old. But I started journaling very specifically and saying things like, this is the feeling that I'm having. This is what caused the feeling. And this is how I would like to feel. And then I started identifying, okay, if I want to feel satisfied, if I want to feel happy, then what are all the behaviors that align with that? When I'm happy, what am I actually doing to be happy? So then I started doing that for myself and started with small things like bubble baths, some aromatherapy. I started with a playlist that I have on my phone. I call it the Centering Playlist. It has about 35 different songs that I just play. And I created a space in my closet where I could go inside. I could sit on a comfortable pillow. I have a little moonlight in there, a little lava lamp in there. And I just started doing those things on a consistent basis. And it's something that I'm still practicing today.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I think many neurotypicals, you know, forget about how important their own self-care is, and they get lost in the relationship. And the things that you're talking about are rather simple things to do. You know, if you like candles, you can light candles. If you like to read, you can read. If you like, you know, going to the water, you can go to the water. So one of the things that I forgot I really loved doing was reading magazines. So I got a subscription to Oprah's magazine. And as soon as that came in the mail, I would take time. I had a special chair that I loved to sit in, and I would sit in my chair and I'd read the O magazine from, you know, front to back. That was something that I really, really loved to do. Also, I realized that I love to sit on my front porch, which Olga's been to many times, and have tea in the morning on the weekends, because, you know, I couldn't do it every day when I was at work. And so that was important for me. And then I also realized that I had neglected some of my friendships. I mean, we'd talk or text or whatever, but it became really important for me to make arrangements with my friends. That was part of my self-care. And then the other thing I realized is because my ex didn't really like to travel much as he got older, for whatever reason, whether it was leaving his comfort zone or, you know, traveling got more difficult as we got older, I started making arrangements with friends to travel. There were a bunch of different cities that I wanted to go to, and I made sure that I went to all of them. I either traveled with a friend or I traveled with my daughter, who would go anywhere with me as long as I paid. So those were some of the things that I did. And what I noticed is on the days that I did some type of self-care, I was able to handle more of the things that would challenge me normally in my relationship. Did that or does that apply to you, Manisa?
It does apply to me. And Mona, you're exactly right, is that before, you know, you and I came into that awareness that doing those things help us to move forward, I would just be stuck. Like if there was an incident that happened that morning and it created a negative feeling in me, I literally felt like, well, I can't move from this space of negative energy until you make it right. Mm-hmm. And so I would give all of my power away, and I would have these silent contracts in my head that he's going to do this and he's going to do this and he's going to do this and he's going to make it all better. And that was absolute torture for me, because the more I waited for him to engage in those behaviors, of course, the longer he didn't engage in them because he right. didn't know what to do. So right. then here I am. Now let's create a new narrative. And the new narrative is, oh, okay. So now he doesn't even care. Right. So let's just pile those emotions in there too. And let's just pile hurt, you know, on top of hurt, on top of hurt. And again, it was just a crazy making cycle. But once I realized that that was my responsibility to calm my own heart rate down, to slow my own breathing down, to stop the storytelling in my brain, that was up to me. And so once I learned, and still in the process of learning how to do that, I felt like I empowered myself, because it's like, okay, I can feel negative emotions and not get stuck and still move on, you know, for the rest of my day.
That's great. That is so fantastic. And I have to be honest with our listeners, I really don't feel that I provided myself with a level of self-care that I needed to be emotionally, spiritually, and physically healthy until my separation. And that was a major turning point for me, because I realized that I was depending on my ex-husband for emotional support and for him to fix things when he did something that I didn't like. And even if I told him in as clear a way as possible, what I needed from him so that we could, you know, move on beyond what had happened. I don't think when I said what I said, he heard it, because I think he saw it or heard it as a criticism. And I was criticizing him way too much, because at the time I was so unhappy and not providing enough self-care. So when we separated, that's when, actually the day after I separated was Olga's birthday. Oh, yeah. Remember that. And we went out to one of those Magic Mike shows, and we laughed and we had such a great time. And that was the beginning of figuring out everything that I needed to take care of myself and provide the self-care that I hadn't provided in my marriage. It was, at first I felt like I was being selfish, to be honest with you, because my daughter was away at college, my ex, you know, and I had, we weren't living under the same roof. And I thought, wow, can I really have this much fun? Can I go out with my friends? Can I go to the theater? Can I go to the movies? Can I, you know, take time for myself and just cook what I want, do what I want? And I realized, yeah, but it was such a major shift in my brain and in my heart and my soul that it took me a really long time to do it on a regular basis. But now I do it every day.
And to be comfortable doing it too. And that's where I was going. Like, in my experience, it was a short relationship. We were not together for a long time. And the whole time I knew that we were neurodiverse. And the main thing that kept me going and that I consider is very, very important as self-care was Mona. And having the ability to talk to someone about how I felt about his different traits and the dynamics in the relationship, and feeling comfortable with, okay, identifying that, yes, we are neurodiverse, and my expectations immediately lowered or changed in you know, being more in the moment and looking at what I had. And I think that the one main thing that broke the relationship was more his personal process, not so much what was going on between us in the dynamics. It was more his personal process was just not happening here. So he needed to go back to where he was in that. So that didn't give us a lot of time to figure out other ways to interact or to make it work. It kind of stopped at very prematurely. So I only had the opportunity to experience that my main way to stay balanced emotionally was to have someone that could listen to me, that could understand where I was going through. And I could talk things, you know, out and just figure things out in my mind, so I could do what I needed to do in a more assertive way with him. And that helped a lot and lowered the level of stress in any of the interactions that we had. We really never fought or never, you know, had a really bad moment like that. Maybe he was also keeping everything inside, and because it was such a short time, that bomb never exploded. So I didn't, you know, I didn't get to experience the full extent of things in that relationship. But I think that my main way to take care of myself was to have someone I could trust and talk to.
I think that's really important. Anything else, Manisa, that you're doing for yourself around self-care? And then we'll talk a little bit about how it's helped each of us grow in our lives.
Well, I give myself permission to feel my feelings. Like in the past, when my husband would do something to me, and most of the time it would be unintentional, he would not be aware, and it would be hurtful. And I would like be mad at myself. Like I'd be saying, why are you crying? Like, why does this matter to you so much? Oh, you're so weak. you know, you're not strong. You let everything that he does affect you in such a negative way. I mean, I would just tell myself all of these messages. And then I learned that I was an empath and I was a person who feels my emotions strongly. So, but in order for me to not let those emotions overwhelm me, I had to understand that although emotions are very real when we feel them, they are temporary and they are going to pass. So instead of me just allowing them to rule and dictate my entire day or entire week, I started learning how to process them. Like, okay, this feeling is here, this sadness is here, or this anger is here, or this disappointment is here. Now, how do I push it away? Or how do I not push it away, but how do I work past it? Whereas before, I would just sit in it and sit in it and sit in it and sit in it until it didn't hurt anymore. I didn't do anything to actively move it out of my body.
I can totally relate, Manisa. Mm-hmm. I can totally relate. I don't want to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, so I was just saying that was the big awareness for me. It's just that you have permission. Like if you feel angry, it's okay. If you feel sad, it's okay. If you're disappointed, it's okay. But what you're not going to do is you're not going to just allow that feeling to dictate that, okay, now I'm sad at home. I'm going to be sad when I go to work. I'm going to be sad when I hang out with my friends after work. I'm going to be sad when I come back home. Like you get to make a decision of how long you want to feel this way. And I did that by saying, yes, I'm sad. It's a normal feeling, just like joy or happiness. And it doesn't have to rule my entire day. Like I get to meditate and think on other things besides just the sadness. That's just a small thing that happened in my day. It is not my entire day.
Yeah. That's wonderful. And basically what you're talking about is you were doing cognitive behavioral therapy with yourself. You were changing your thoughts, but you were letting yourself feel all the emotions that you were having. And I think that that's something that some of the folks that I've talked to over the years are afraid of. You know, if I actually let myself feel the anger, if I actually let myself feel the grief, if I actually let myself feel the sadness, will I get caught in it? And will it make our relationship even worse? Mm-hmm. And I think because I didn't have the tools back then, or I was just so lonely, I didn't use the tools I had access to. And now I use them on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I wish I had used them in my relationship because I know that I did get stuck for days in that lonely feeling and depression because we didn't know we were neurodiverse. I would do everything in my power to change things myself and to help my ex deal with the challenges he was dealing with, and nothing seemed to work. So no matter what I told myself about those emotions that I was feeling, and about how much time I gave myself to feel them, the hope that I had was not being realized. The changes that I wanted to see in our marriage weren't being realized. So I ended up going into a deep, you know, depression. Mm-hmm. And I've shared this with the listeners before. During our separation, I actually went on Cymbalta, an antidepressant, and I needed it. And I think if I had not taken it, I probably would have stayed in those negative emotions because we didn't find out that we were neurodiverse until 2017, and we separated early 2016. So I went for a while without having the antidepressants. I know they're not an answer for everybody, but it helped me feel what I needed to feel without getting so stuck in it that I couldn't function. And it also changed the chemicals in my brain, I mean, to be honest. And that helped me grow immensely. I'm still on the antidepressants now, but I probably will go off of them at the end of this year. And next month, it'll be 4 years that I've been on the antidepressants. So, and I say that, Manisa and Olga, only because if someone feels that their emotions and their feelings and their thoughts are impacting their day-to-day and they're not able to function as a parent or a partner or at work or whatever, you know, talk to a psychologist, talk to a psychiatrist, talk to your medical doctor, talk to your OBGYN. I actually got my medication, my prescription from my OBGYN, who's also a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. I would hate for somebody to go down that black hole with their emotions and not be able to get out, you know, because this can be very depressing. But I agree with you, feeling those emotions. And if I had to cry or whatever I had to go through, I went through it. I felt it. I didn't hide it. And Olga knows that.
My husband is a lot better now with responding to my emotions because we have some scripted language that we've learned with our therapist. And we had an incident this weekend and I was upset. And he came to me and he said, you know, I don't know what I need to do to make it better, but I want to. And so then we sat down and we had a conversation and I said, do you understand why I feel the way that I do? And he said, I don't. Mm. And so I didn't try to explain it to him. And I said, well, I am hurting right now. And I feel like you dismissed me. And when you dismiss me, it makes me feel like you don't care about me. So then we started having a conversation about what the behavior looked like and not about the emotion. So here is what you did when you dismissed me. Here's what you said. Here's what you did. So in the future, we need to replace what you said and what you did with something else so that I won't have the same response. So it sounds very technical, and it is, because that's how the Aspie brain thinks. Like, you're not going to ask them, how do you feel about something? You ask them, what do you think about it?
That is such an important point. And I wish I had known that, you know, 30 mm-hmm. years ago. Mm-hmm. It would have been so helpful. I think that I learned that with my daughter, because one of the things that I used to say to her was, what can we learn from this experience? Instead of saying, how do you feel about that? Because she also is very much like her father and doesn't like to deal with her feelings and her emotions and doesn't like to talk about it. And she's learned how to process it. But I realized that by saying that to her, what is the learning opportunity here? I was being more logical and she was able to process that. So thank you for sharing that about your husband and you this weekend. So do you feel like both of you are in a better place because of that conversation?
Oh, absolutely. Afterwards, we talked actually last night, he wanted to, you know, after something happens like that, a lot of times your partner who has autism will not know where they stand with you because, you know, they have the all or nothing thinking. Mm-hmm. So they think, well, I'll use my husband. So he thinks, well, because I hurt her, now she doesn't like me anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't understand. Like, that was just an incident that happened. We worked through it and now we move forward. So he still wasn't in a place of knowing that I had moved past it. So yesterday he said, where do you... What was his question? Where do you see me in our marriage? And I knew he was trying to get to something. So I had him clarify it again. And basically what he was trying to say is, do you like me? Mm-hmm. And it was so hard to explain, like, I like you, but I don't like what you did. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, but it's the same thing. I said, no, it's not the same thing. It is not. And I tried to use an example with our granddaughter, because he loves this child. When he's with her, you have no idea that he has Asperger's. So expressive, so full of emotion. And I said, when you tell her, when you have to reprimand her for something that she did, do you not like her anymore because of that? And he said, no, like, duh. You know, and I said, it's the same thing with me. I don't like what you did, but I still like you. But I realized that he needs that constant, like, he literally needs me to say, yes, you hurt my feelings and I was sad, but I'm not sad anymore.
Like, that is Yeah, that is so, so powerful. I think that, you know, I think one of the reasons that I got to the point of wanting to separate from my ex is I really feel that there was toxicity, because I think he thought that I didn't like him. I still think he thinks that I didn't like him, and I love him. You know, I do. I'll always love him. And I love the way you explain that, because when you explained about how your husband plays with your granddaughter, his granddaughter, and when she does something wrong, he will tell her, but he still likes her and he still loves her. That was my ex with our daughter when she was young. It hurt him to tell her that she did something wrong, but he would do it in the nicest, kindest, most loving way. But he couldn't take that kind of response from me, because he took it personal. Like if I was telling him in the nicest, kindest, most loving way that his behavior or the words he used weren't the best, that I felt hurt by something he said or did, he immediately got defensive. So I so understand that. It's very hard for them to put themselves in anybody else's shoes or anybody else's place. And right. I love how you explain that. That's mm-hmm. wonderful. Well, let's talk a little bit about how you feel you've grown by doing more of the self-care for yourself. Is there something that you want to share around that?
Well, I can recommend some wonderful sensitive skin bath products, because I have taken so many baths. My husband knows, like, when that door is closed and that she has her little Bluetooth speaker going and the candles are on, he already knows, like, do not disturb. I'm telling you, I look forward to that. Like, I'll be driving home saying, as soon as I get home, I'm going to, you know, take me a nice bubble bath. And it's just wonderful. It is. I feel like I read in this book one time that loneliness is not the absence of other people, it's the absence of yourself. Mm. And when we feel lonely and when we feel like no one understands, it's really we've disconnected from ourselves. Yeah. And so
that's beautiful.
That is great. Yeah. So when I'm in the bathtub, I say my affirmations and you know, Manisa, you are loved. Manisa, you are valued. Manisa, you matter. And I know that may sound really corny to people, but words change energy.
I agree.
Words change the whole atmosphere. It's no difference than saying, Manisa, you suck.
Right.
Manisa, you're a loser.
Right.
When you hear those words, it creates a different energy. So why would we give our power to just anybody and just wait for someone to affirm us? We can do that for ourselves. And sometimes it's just words. And then when you say it over and over again, you're like, yeah, I am valuable. I do matter. You really start to believe it. You start to feel it. Your whole energy shifts. People around you begin to act differently when they're around you. It's a lighter type of energy, because you know how we were when we were, you know, bearing the weight of these relationships and people would come around us. It wasn't enjoyable.
Right.
You know, so right. I firmly believe in the power of words to shift your energy and to constantly affirm yourself and to tell yourself, like, one of my things that I say when I'm crying in the mirror, like literally I'm in the mirror because I'm wiping my face and I'm looking at myself and I'm crying, and I will look at myself and say, I'm going to take care of you. Aww. I'm going to take care of you. That's and I so learned cool. that just from being a child, and I had the most loving, caring, patient, positive parents, but they were not very good with dealing with emotions. You know, they were just, you're going to be okay. It's okay. And that was pretty much it.
Right.
So I've learned in therapy that as a little girl, I did not know that I was safe when I had these emotional reactions. You know, go to your room. When you stop crying, come out. And they thought mm-hmm. that was, you know, helpful. But what it told me is that we don't want to deal with that. You go alone and you process that in your own little 8-year-old mind. And then when you're all better, you can come and be with us again. Now you're worthy of being around us. So wow. I carried that into my marriage. And so I had to start telling that little girl in the mirror, like, I'm going to take care of you. Like, I'm not going to let you down. It's going to be okay.
That's great. I mean, that is, the words you use are fabulous. And I'm all about positive affirmations. I'll actually put them on post-its on my mirror in my bathroom. And I start the day with appreciation and gratitude. I don't journal anymore. I literally say them out loud. So if you were in my bedroom in the morning when I wake up, you would hear all the things that I appreciate and I'm grateful for. And it just changes my whole outlook about my day. And I realize that by doing that, I have grown so much as a person. I've always been more of an optimist and more positive, but I really got mired in the negativity during my marriage and especially the separation. There was so much going on, and I realized that I had to do this on a regular basis with myself. And by doing it, I've grown as a person, but then I also, this is really, really important for me, I have boundaries that I never had before. And I am not letting anybody into my circle that doesn't have positive energy. And it doesn't mean that people can't have problems and issues that they're, you know, dealing with. No, I'm talking about people who stay stuck in that negativity. And that's one major way that I've grown, because our marriage did become toxic, where, you know, we didn't necessarily have the right words to share with each other when something didn't feel right. And now I know that I will talk to anybody about anything. I have no problem with that. But if you're constantly coming back with negative, and every day you're living a really negative life, in that you hate your work, you hate the people around you, you're not nice to your kids, I don't want you in my life. And I've had to make my boundaries very clear to some people recently. And I think that's a big part of my growth from being in a neurodiverse relationship, because I had no boundaries, none. I don't know about you, but.
I love that word, Mona. And I know Olga can relate to this too, boundaries, because you're right. When you are having an emotional response to something, you are just a wild, crazy person. I mean, it does not feel good, you know. And then when it's over, I know for me, the tears came, because first of all, it was a release of all the rage, but it was also a disappointment. And look at how I'm behaving. Like, I cannot believe I am at this level of frustration. And anger doesn't solve the problem. Right. You know, it doesn't solve the problem at all. So it doesn't matter how angry we become. And anger is an emotion like all other emotions. It's nothing wrong. It's not wrong to be angry, but we are still responsible for what we do with our anger. And so for me, I had to set boundaries for myself. Like, I'm not going to do this when I'm angry. I'm not going to say this when I'm angry. One of the things that we coined in our marriage is we will attack the problem and not the person.
Amen.
Because there was a lot of, you know, shots beneath the belt for, you know, both ways. And so we realized, like, that is not productive at all. And now we have wounds that have to be healed. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to spend the rest of my marriage healing wounds. You know, that's not why I got married, is to make someone feel bad about themselves only to patch them up and then break them down again. Like, that's not the direction that I want to go in. So those boundaries that I set for myself, like, in your anger, here's what you are not allowed to do, Manisa, because that is going to cause a lot of harm, you know, down the road.
Yeah,
absolutely. It takes me back to, I think that the most difficult time for me during that relationship, it wasn't during the relationship, it was after the breakup. And that's when I was more frustrated and more hurt because of what he did and said after we broke up. And it took us months to go through the whole process, many conversations. And I think that that taught me to be very, very compassionate with my own feelings, my own life, my own way to process things, be patient with myself and take the time to have those conversations, to listen, to allow myself to feel exactly everything you two have talked about. And it's very, now that I think about it, it's kind of crazy for me to feel like I felt all of that after we broke up. So in the process of healing and kind of forgiving and putting things in place, all the feelings and not carrying any resentment, so the way for me to do it was giving myself the space to do it, the conversations, the ability to stay in contact so that we could work things through. Because even though we were not going to continue together, I felt it was necessary for me to heal, for both. But at that time, I was more, you know, concerned about my own emotional balance and my healing from everything that had happened. So definitely being compassionate. And then in the relationship after that one, that beginning of feeling compassionate and in letting myself feel the feelings and think the thoughts, that was a key to react to what happened with the next relationship. So, and also when it ended, that could have hurt me a lot, but it didn't, because of what I learned in that previous experience. So it's very nice. It feels good when you look back and you feel like, oh my God, I grew. And it shows in the way I handled that following relationship in the end of it. And what could have hurt me a lot didn't, because I didn't take things personal, because I gave him the freedom to feel and make decisions. And I felt the compassion and the freedom to feel, make my own decisions and feel okay with my decisions and be responsible for those. And that was so liberating and also not hurtful. So I could move on really quickly. And I was like, how did that happen? I didn't even realize that happened when I came out of it. I was like, how did that happen? And then looking back, it was like, oh, okay.
You grew.
And of course I had my Mona with me to talk and over analyze things. But it really pays to do all of this. Every bath, every reading, every moment of solitude, every affirmation, you know, every positive feedback with your friends, everything that will make you relax, make you feel better about yourself, it pays. And you will see how it pays in the next situation, in the next problem that you have, or issue that comes up, or relationship, or you will see the effects of what you just went through and every single thing you did to take care of yourself.
I agree. That was excellent. So usually at the end, we talk about lessons learned. And I think what you just said, Olga, is my lesson learned. I think the only other thing that I would add to that is that nobody else can empower you. Only you can empower yourself. So with each thing that you do to take care of yourself and each opportunity that gives you knowledge and wisdom and allows you to grow so you're better the next time there's a fight or the next relationship you have or whatever, you know, that becomes part of your empowerment as a person, as a partner, as a mother, whatever role you're in, as a colleague. And I think that's really important, because I did not feel empowered for the longest time in my relationship. but I am so empowered now, but I had to empower myself. And I think that was a big lesson for me. Mm-hmm. And Manisa, what about you?
I would have to say that, you know, sometimes we have the misconception that self-care happens as a result of something bad happening. And, you know, now we're fixing it or making ourselves better. And that self-care is not a result of something happening to hurt you, but self-care is you being responsible for loving yourself. That's your job. Like, we don't give that job to other people. If other people choose to love us, of course, that's wonderful. But if that doesn't happen, if we're not in a relationship, we're not waiting on love, it's already present. You just have to tap into it within yourself.
Amen.
Yeah, I love that.
Amen. Yeah. Amen.
It's the key to happiness, I think, because if you don't make everybody else responsible for your happiness and your self-care and everything else, there will be less deceptions or you know, disappointments, or it'll work out with every single role you have in your life. So
yeah,
I keep taking things from my experience and what I hear of experiences in the neurodiverse love out to the world, to different situations, and it kind of applies for everything. Mm-hmm. in a neurotypical relationship also. I think it applies to a lot of things. If we learned all of this for anything in life, I think we'll be more successful.
Yeah, too bad they don't teach it in school, right?
Yeah, we should have.
Oh, yes.
We learn everything else that we'll never use. We would use this.
That's right.
So any other lessons that you wanted to share, Olga? Or was that your lesson?
That was my lesson.
Okay,
yeah.
Awesome, awesome. Any last words that you have before I close out, Manisa?
No, I'm just so glad that this podcast exists. I just keep saying it every week. I just think that the work that you and Olga started is just, it's going to be just life-changing.
Thank you. Well, we're so glad that you're here. And we actually hit 3,500 downloads of the podcast yesterday, and it just keeps growing exponentially. And if folks want to follow us, actually, it's me mostly posting on Instagram. You can, our handle is neurodiverse_love. And then we have a website, neurodiverselove.com. And then I do two peer support groups every month. And if you're interested in joining those, you can send a direct message on Instagram, or you can email us at neurodiverselove, the number 4, the letter U, at gmail.com. We are thrilled that you all are sharing these episodes with others around the world. We have folks from all over listening. Please feel free to share, excuse me, and let everybody know that we're also looking to interview neurodiverse couples. If you are a neurodiverse couple and you'd like to be on the podcast, you can DM us on Instagram or send us an email. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Manisa, we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye.